This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 13th of August 2021. Hello, and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, where we read extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, and I'm joined this week by John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Walker.
Hello.
Sorry, there are two Peters here today, but we can't help that. Well, they will help me read through the various items from this week's Hampshire Chronicle. And we are delighted to be recording this in our new studio at Unit 12 Winnell in Winchester. Our editors this week are Sue Frayn, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Well, first, a regular notices. If you know someone who is sight impaired, would like to receive her recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz Legree. The contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Just to remind you, you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. If you are having any problems with the box which you have for playing the recording, please make sure that it is plugged in to the mains and fully charged. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using the memory stick in your box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through the Winchester Talking News website. There you can listen to it either off the website or download it for listening to later. So our main headlines this week are major changes to one-way system, another in nursery criticised by Ofsted, staggering pass rate as teachers decide grades.
Major changes to one-way system. A busy stretch of Winchester's one-way system could be made two-way in radical new plans. One of the top priorities for the movement strategy is to convert Friarsgate, Union Street and the two-lane part of Upper Brook Street into two-way streets. But the chairman of Winchester Action on Climate Change has compared this to, quote, moving the deck chairs on the Titanic. Sorry about the cliche, said Chris Holloway, who has been with the charity for several years. International climate scientists told us on Monday that climate change is widespread, rapid and intensifying, and some trends are irreversible. Yet our councils don't even mention climate change in this report about next steps on traffic in Winchester, a report that assumes that car use will continue to grow. A report that doesn't address the government's target of 50% of journeys in towns being made by bike and on foot by 2030, nor the government's ambition for better buses. A report that follows closely on the County Council's decision to reopen our streets to cars. We need more buses, more walking, more cycling, and many fewer private cars for our health, our economy, and to stop runaway global heating. Hampshire County Council and the City Council are still working on the movement strategy. Councillor Martin Todd said it is critical to help deliver a strong and sustainable recovery from the pandemic. We've been using the movement strategy, he said, to inform our work to reduce traffic and partially pedestrianise the square and the Broadway at weekends. We're also supporting investment in a new park and ride site in Bar End, and we recognise there is more to be done. This report sets out ambitions that will cut carbon and improve air quality whilst enabling our city centre and wider district to thrive. Councillor Todd continued, importantly, this is not just about how our streets are laid out or where people will park. Those issues are, of course, important. But this work is also about getting better, faster bus routes and services, as well as implementing better ways to deliver freight to shops and businesses. Working closely with residents, businesses and the County Council will be essential in delivering tangible improvements as set out in the movement strategy. We are ambitious in our plans for the near future, and we look forward to working collaboratively and at pace on this project as we recover from COVID-19. Other projects that would be prioritised include a park and ride provision on the Andover Road corridor serving the north of the city, bus priority measures, infrastructure improvements, and working with bus operators to deliver improved bus frequencies on routes across the city where demand is highest, to encourage greater use of local bus services, and the improvement of conditions for cyclists and pedestrians on the route from the railway station to the city via the West Gate and onto the new leisure centre at Bar End, as well as on the Worthy Road corridor. Councillor Rob Humby, deputy leader of the County Council, said, "Since the Winchester Movement strategy was adopted, we have been working with colleagues at Winchester City Council and partner organisations to develop proposed schemes which, if implemented, would help to reduce traffic congestion in the city centre by expanding out-of-town parking capacity, providing new cycle routes and schemes to encourage walking. If taken forward, these schemes could also help to improve air quality. The coronavirus pandemic has accelerated changes in how we work and shop, which consequently has significantly altered everyday travel plans. The proposals emerging from the movement strategy seek to enable people to adopt more sustainable ways of travelling into and within Winchester City."
Thank you, John. Peter, please.
Another nursery criticised by Ofsted. A childcare provider has been criticised again just a month after it closed a Winchester nursery following welfare concerns. Casa dei Bambini Day Nursery in St John's Street has seen its rating fall from good to inadequate after an inspection in June. The nursery is run by Hartley House Montessori Limited, whose director is Susan Hartley-Raven. Last month, the Lido Nursery School and Activity Club, also owned by Mrs. Hartley-Raven, closed when inspectors found that it had failed to resolve welfare concerns and children did not make good progress. Ofsted said there were breaches in relation to the safeguarding of children at Casa dei Bambini Day Nursery, which, quote, "undermine children's health and welfare," close quote. The report published on July 23rd said, "This inspection was brought forward to look into concerns around food hygiene, health and staff deployment. At inspection, it was found that staff do not ensure that the premises and equipment are safe and suitable. For example, staff do not demonstrate how they are managing safety and do not take all reasonable steps to ensure that children are not exposed to the dangers presented by broken furniture or a wet slide. Staff fail to act quickly when children drop food onto the floor and then put it into their mouths. This means that children's well-being is undermined." Inspectors said leadership is weak. The manager fails to ensure that all staff have a good understanding of the nursery's safeguarding procedures, which put children at risk. Risk assessments are not implemented effectively to keep children safe. Despite this, staff have a sufficient knowledge of the basic signs of abuse and neglect. Leaders ensure that all staff are suitable to work with children and carry out appropriate checks to ensure that they remain suitable, the report added. Inspectors praised the nursery for the quality of education, which is supported well, leading to good outcomes for children. They noted that children enjoy a broad and balanced curriculum, adding, "staff have high expectations for all children in their care."
Thank you, Peter. And the last headline story is headed, "Staggering Pass Rate as Teachers Decide Grades." The class of 2021 at Peter Simmons received their A-level results, including 18 sets of twins, and the pass rate is staggering. Figures show a pass rate for A-levels at 99%, with over two-thirds of the grades awarded, that is 68%, being A-star to B. The rate for vocational courses is over 99%, with 75% of the grades awarded at distinction or above. Teachers were tasked with deciding grades this year by looking at various pieces of work and mock exams. This was due to the COVID causing closures up and down the country. And there were also 146 students who were awarded A star in mathematics. Yes,
that is very extraordinary.
It is good, isn't it? It is
absolutely
good.
Extraordinary.
Right, we have a quick rundown of what follows. We have start with the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, opinion by Joanna Lewis, Belgarum, and lighting up times. So here are the death notices. Bailey, Anne Ellen Bailey, peacefully on the 30th of July following a stroke.
Finn, Gillian Rosemary Finn, peacefully on the 7th of August, aged 75.
Inglis, Marjorie Inglis, née Griffiths, peacefully on the 31st of July, aged 92.
Leslett, John Leslett, peacefully on the 30th of July, aged 75.
Lawley, Rona Jill Lawley, née Neil Dumper, after a long battle with cancer.
Monday, Dennis Arthur Munday, peacefully on the 23rd of July, aged 88.
Trusler, Owena Trusler, known as Wendy, peacefully at home on the 30th of July, aged 96. And now we have a Christian comment from John Bleeth.
Entitled this week, Every Moment Matters, and it's written by the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is rector of St Faith's Parish at St Cross in Winchester. In 1948, at the age of 30, a nurse called Cicely Saunders had two experiences which would change her life. Fiercely intelligent, she had decided at school that God did not exist. But after finishing a university course in social work, she went to Cornwall on holiday with Christian friends. As they talked, she discovered she had come to believe in God. It was, she said, as if a switch had flipped. Returning from Cornwall, she cared for David Tasmer, a terminally ill Pole. They developed a relationship of searing intensity. He suggested that the peace he was finding with her in his final days should be available to everyone facing death. He left her the legacy of a large sum of money and the prophetic words, "I will be a window in your home." Saunders suffered a number of bereavements herself in the following year. She began to feel called to pioneer a completely new form of care. She began training again as a doctor. She worked in existing hospices. By 1959, she had a detailed plan for what would become St. Christopher's Hospice in Sydenham. She read Psalm 37. "Commit thy way unto the Lord, and put thy trust in him, and he shall bring it to pass." She decided to act. This meant patiently raising further funds, garnering support, and overcoming many obstacles. Building began in 1965, and the first patients were admitted in 1967. St. Christopher's was intended by Saunders to be a religious foundation of an open character. It welcomed patients of all faiths and none. Its philosophy was that every moment in life matters. You matter because you are you. You matter to the last moment of your life. A clear window was installed in the hospice in memory of David Tasmer's prophecy and donation. By the time Saunders, now a dame, died herself in 2005 at St. Christopher's, she had inspired the building of hospices all over the world. She had transformed the field of palliative care. Cicely Saunders's vision has found an echo in an extraordinary community-wide effort of planning and fundraising in our city over the last 5 years. Over £4 million has been raised to refurbish Burrell House at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Winchester Hospice opens its doors in September. As well as providing inpatient care, it will become the hub for palliative care in our community. At the memorial service for Saunders in Westminster Abbey, verses from Matthew 25 were read. The righteous will answer the king, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? And the king will answer them, Truly, I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me.
Thank you, John. Now we have letters to the editor, a real mixed bag this week. Starting off with Peter, please. Who is not ready to receive. Quick, change glasses. Go.
And this letter is from Paul Hickey, entitled Need for Clubs. Sir, the Discovery Centre should have lots more evening clubs. There are very few community amenities in Winchester High Street if you don't want to go to a pub and drink alcohol. The Discovery Centre used to have a few evening clubs before COVID, like the Winchester Photographic Society and a Latin American dance club, but very little else. There should be lots more evening clubs there, like art appreciation, art clubs, local history groups, especially in historic Winchester, archaeology groups, craft clubs, etc. After the miserable antisocial year when we've all been locked up, people really need community amenities where they can meet people again and make new friends, as well, of course, of enjoying the evening clubs themselves. The Discovery Centre has lots of spare rooms, like the auditorium, performance room, and the many other empty rooms on the ground floor. This from Paul Hickey, Parchment Street, Winchester.
This letter is written by Simon Lever and is headed, Look After the Iconic River Itchen. Sir, chalk streams and rivers form a special part of this historic region. The River Itchen is an iconic river flowing through Winchester and onwards for many miles. The Itchen was poet Keats' favourite riverside walk, and indeed cherished by most who enjoy the tranquillity and serenity, accompanied by, for example, majestic swans. Discharging sewage into chalk rivers, any rivers, must cease immediately for the sake of current and future generations. I would hope that some of the £96 million fine directed at Southern Water will be directed at preventing further damage to our treasured natural environment. That's written by Simon Lever, Juniper Close Badger Farm, Winchester.
Nick Ray writes about cycle needs. Sir, several recent readers' letters, including one on July the 22nd, have implied that the North Wall's socially distanced coned pedestrian path also doubled as a cycle lane. The pinch point layout of the cones at various points alone would have made this impossible. COVID health and social distancing issues aside. And I'm not aware of any signs that indicate that the strip was anything other than a route for pedestrians on foot. Winchester desperately needs a joined-up cycle network. But could someone from the council confirm whether or not the layout included cycling provision, as some of your readers believe? So writes Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Tim Major writes about the upgrade of Junction 9 of the M3. Sir, Malcolm Wallace, in the Chronicle Letters, July the 29th, suggests that the £175 million project to upgrade the M3 Junction 9 should be spent instead on creating 400 miles of new cycle routes in Hampshire. Junction 9 is busy because it serves long-distance travellers to and from Winchester, and the many commercial vehicles moving goods to and from the Winnall industrial area. It is also a point where a major highway from the Midlands, the A34, meets a major highway from London, the M3, to deliver goods and travellers to and from the conurbations, beaches, ports and airports of the South Coast. Cycling is not an option for any of these journeys. Cycling is also not a realistic option for most pensioner and shopping journeys. Many journeys in bad weather, or indeed any commute or takeaway delivery further than about 3 miles. Well over 90% of cycling is surely recreational. People may be priced out of their cars, but an additional 400 miles of cycle routes in Hampshire will neither replace any measurable car mileage nor contribute one iota to saving our planet. This from Tim Major, Bassetwood Drive, Southampton.
Una Stevens writes, Uni Pento. Sir, look behind you! The pantomime season has arrived, but 5 months early. See Chronicle front page, July the 29th. Was Craig Horde, as in his role as Dick Whittington, aiming to become the new Lord Mayor of London, with Alan Titchmarsh in step behind him as his faithful cat? Winchester University has featured on the front page of the Chronicle in 2 consecutive weeks with news of its latest honorary doctorates. Like its Chancellor, the recipients are stars of stage and screen, which simply proves how desperate this university is for publicity after its ill-judged expansion. A more fitting list, awarded posthumously, could include the following. Amongst others, St Swithin, Alfred the Great, William of Wickham, Samuel Sebastian Wesley, Jane Austen, Josephine Butler, and Florence Nightingale. Indeed, those of the above buried in the cathedral could be keeping a listening ear on the graduation ceremonies. In my view, shared by others, Winchester University needs to do far more to contribute to the heritage of this wondrous city after which it is named. King Alfred would surely have been in agreement. Sam Hatherley's headline on page 5, Amazing! University Honours Strictly Judge, could not be more apposite. This university's awarding of honorary degrees in recent years beggars belief. It's Una Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
Multi-story is the title of this next letter from Kenneth Day. Sir, the situation regarding the proposed new multi-storey car park in Barfield Close has become very messy, to say the least. Having completely ignored the protests of local residents and others equally exorcised and bulldozed ahead with their seriously flawed planning application granted on the nod by Winchester City Council, judge and jury, poacher and gamekeeper, some might say, over their own submission, they have now filed yet another version. To make matters worse, the new one is only marginally different from the previous one, and which still does not address the major concerns expressed on many occasions since this proposal was first mooted, although, to be fair, updated documents are still being added to the portal. Not surprisingly, many objections have been again publicly filed, not just by local residents, but others further afield, but nonetheless affected, and who see this as a totally unacceptable intrusion on the site of special scientific interest in South Downs National Park. Work continues on the foundations, and the complaints about the noise and physical vibration effects of the works on Domum Road are already being voiced and submitted formally to the contractors. Despite the High Court having granted permission for a judicial review of the original planning application, there being sound legal reasons for doing so, Winchester City Council, spurred on no doubt by their political leadership, has continued to work the site at risk, to the public purse and up until now refused to engage publicly in arbitration in the hope of finding a mutually acceptable solution, the bones of which are already in the public domain. Arrogant and hardly democratic they be by virtue of their total disregard for the opinions of those whom they represent, and clearly unprepared to consider public opinion, particularly if it does not suit them. Even more galling is the fact that we have to resort to media, such as the Hampshire Chronicle, to express opinions that are conveniently ignored when submitted through the supposed correct channels. As ratepayers, we deserve better. That letter is from Kenneth Day, Domham Road, Winchester.
And this letter from Phil Yates talks about the 1930s High Street. Sir, reading Ian Tate's letter with reference to the resurfacing of our High Street in the Chronicle, August the 5th, I remember going back to the 1930s, two-way traffic used the whole length from Westgate to the Broadway, with regular jams in the City Cross area. I can't recall the High Street ever being resurfaced, and now the section between St Thomas Street and Market Street has been pedestrianised, I would have thought that very little resurfacing is necessary. As a matter of interest, policemen in white jackets controlled the traffic out of Drury Street and Southgate Street before the traffic lights were introduced in the 1930s. This from Phil Yates, Tower Street in Winchester.
Next letter is from Councillor Fiona Isaacs, and it's headed COVID Recovery. Sir, as an elected Winchester City Councillor member for Alresford and Itchen Valley, I consider it important that our market towns have a voice in Winchester City Council's decision making. On June the 22nd, I spoke at the Business and Housing Policy Committee. I was disappointed to note that, despite feedback, market towns, including Whiteley, still do not have their own current COVID-19 recovery plan. Communication during the first lockdown between market towns and the City Council was very poor, and sadly some businesses missed out on grants despite the best efforts of officers. Excuse me. The current administration needs to ensure that market towns are included in all planning and plans. With no changes made despite feedback, a motion was put to the council on July the 7th proposing that an effective plan for business recovery across the whole district be put in place. I was due to second the motion as a representative of a market town and rural district area, but I was stopped by the Cabinet Member for Economic Recovery, who deliberately stifled my contribution to the debate. It is regrettable that, as the market town struggled to be heard, a deliberate move was made to silence their views. As chair of Alresford's Chamber of Commerce, I am in a unique position to speak about business recovery for market towns. I will always fight for our rural communities who are continually disregarded. Our residents elect councillors to represent their needs effectively. I was therefore very disappointed to see that the two other councillors representing Alresford and Itchen Valley voted against the motion for an effective plan. I will continue to represent my ward in the best possible way, to hold others to account based on fact, not personal views, and to speak out on any inequalities that others either don't recognise or ignore. That was written by Councillor Fiona Isaacs, Winchester City Council for Alresford and Itchen Valley, Windsor Road, Alresford.
Christopher Sharrett writes about peddling myths. Sir, the Green Party campaigner for Winchester's letter in your last edition suggests spending money on cycle routes rather than redeveloping Junction 9 of the M3, quote, which would help us all to use our cars less, unquote. Well, it will only help us all to use our cars less if cycling can replace car use. I can walk to the village shop, and do so often, but I cannot see me or anyone else in South Wanston cycling 5 or 6 miles to the Tesco Extra at Winnell in bad weather and cycling back home laden down with a weekly shop. I doubt if the staff who drive to work at South Wanston School will switch to cycling to get to work. They could do that now if it was feasible. And the same applies to the many mums who do the school run to South Wanston and to their children, most of whom are too young to ride safely on our roads. Excuse the pun, but the Green Party is simply peddling the same old policy. More seriously, HGV drivers, bus drivers and white van man are not able to switch to bicycles to do their jobs, but the Green Party ignores their needs altogether. Worst of all, the Green Party simply ignores the increasing congestion at Junction 9 and does not address that problem at all. Cycling is no solution to that. It is just a red herring. That strongly worded letter is from Christopher Sharrett, Waverley Drive, South Wanston.
And with a change of subject, this letter from Mr. or Ms. J. Sims complains about an ugly building. Sir, I read Colin Palmer's letter about Limmer's Storage, Stakes Lane, Upham, in the Chronicle of July the 22nd. I was shocked by the decision of the City Council to allow this intrusive and ugly building. Also, the large lorries accessing the site will continue to plague the lanes around here. I attended the meeting, and quite honestly, I was not sure I was hearing about the same location as was described to the committee members. I can see the site from where I live, and although about half a mile away, this obnoxious building will dominate the landscape of rolling hills towards Winchester, and I will have to live with it for the rest of my life. I always thought impact on the countryside was a key factor in planning. We all objected, but no one listened. It is always said that local people can make decisions that affect them. Is there any way this development can be looked at again by the council? Say from J. Sims, Ashton Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
Judith Martin writes, Church Housing. Sir, on the same day that I read about the retirement of Nick Kilroy after nearly 30 years of tending the lovely gardens at Wolvesey Palace for the Bishop of Winchester, Chronicle August the 5th, I read in Inside Housing that the Church of England is contemplating setting up its own housing association to deliver genuinely affordable housing. This follows the appointment earlier this year of the first bishop for housing and a report commissioned by the Archbishop of Canterbury called Coming Home, Tackling the Housing Crisis Together. This is commendable and I look forward very much to seeing the church take a lead on housing. Yet while Nick Kilroy has lived in the lovely converted stable block to the palace, his successor will not only be part-time, but also will not live in. This has happened across the field. Once, professionals coming to work for the county council were provided with housing while they found their own accommodation. Police and medical professionals, doctors and especially nurses were provided with housing. The National Trust provided their gardeners and estate workers with housing that now is let for holidaymakers. Meanwhile, in an expensive part of the country, Winchester, obviously, but I first discovered about the National Trust gardeners in Cornwall, where the tourist industry means housing is especially scarce and unaffordable. People on low or average wages are expected to provide for themselves, which invariably adds to travel to work time and thus to expense and stress. It appears that the Diocese of Gloucester set up its own affordable housing development company 10 years ago. They didn't appear to have been much of a trickle-down so far. A nationwide new incentive would not only be valuable in its own right, but as the Church of England at one time was said to be the Tory party at prayer, with luck, the government and other institutions might pay attention. That was written by Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
This letter from Ian Tate is entitled Papa Signs. Sir, people's opinion of the Casson block in St George's Street is either that it's a treasured example of Sir Hugh Casson's work or an ugly carbuncle in the centre of Winchester. That all said, the city do seem very protective about the building and currently don't allow any signage on the external frontage of the building other than one Rouge to Let sign. What worries me is that when Papa John's moved in to 72 to 74 St George's Street, they erected signage and obscured their windows without suitable planning permission. I questioned this with the council, and subsequently in November 2019, a planning application was submitted. This was refused in February 2020. Therefore, as the council owns the building and are the landlord for Papa John's, one would have thought that the sign would have come down and the windows returned to their original state. I have repeatedly questioned why this has not happened with the council, and their planning enforcement team are now looking into it. However, surely as the planning application was refused, it's a simple matter of just telling Papa John's to comply. As I have said previously, attention to detail is so important but somewhat lacking at the moment. So writes Ian Tate, St James Lane, Winchester.
Thank you, John. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can mail them via their website. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we move on to editorial comment, please, Peter.
Thank you, Peter. This one is entitled Decisions Over the One-Way System. It seems that the first major changes to Winchester's one-way system could be implemented, with just under half a mile becoming two-way again. Some may argue that the technology available for traffic management is now so advanced that there is no need for the one-way system at all, which was first implemented nearly 50 years ago. But others may contend two-way roads would encourage more cars into the city. Civic and county chiefs are walking a tightrope with this movement strategy business, which looks to encourage cycling, walking and bus usage in Winchester. On the one hand, it is easy to sympathise with them over the difficult decisions. On the other, a climate emergency has been declared and the City Council is pressing through with a park and ride in Bar End to reduce carbon emissions in the teeth of local opposition and green campaigners. Here's an idea. Perhaps the one-way system could be further reduced or scrapped entirely for a six-month trial. It would cost money to set up, but at least it would then become clear if a one-way system or its removal is the better option.
Thank you, Peter. Now we move on to the Joanna Lewis column. She heads it this week, Nature and Mental Health. They're back. My rewilding has worked. It's like the Serengeti with all this untamed nature. OK, so the garden's a postage stamp size, but it's taken 3 years. But by prioritising wildlife with a mindset shift to this is their space, so what can I do to help them recover? The local damage from biodiversity and tree loss is visibly reversing. No more gardener cutting back the hedges. They've spread, sprouted and flowered. No more garden centre plants, unless they are bee and insect friendly. Weeds, if they flower or don't grow overnight into something that looks illegal and scary, are left to flourish in designated areas. There's a completely wild area fenced off from the dogs, All topsoil that flows in when it rains has been left to form spongy grass cushions. No outdoor night lights that screw up nocturnal feeders or pesticides, but lots of water butts and feeding stations. And guess what? There's an abundance of wildlife. Not just two geriatric blackbirds and a persistent robin, but small flocks of sparrows, wrens, finches and others. I have no idea what they are. Who needs Love Island when your patio by night is a hedgehog shag pad? Wow, they can move fast when there's a new hoglet in town. Oh dear, it's not all birds and bees are a peaceful paradise of mixed nuts and dried mealyworms. Abundance brings predators like the hawk, which dramatically swoop down near the open door and snatch a pigeon. Its mate was left bewildered amidst a flutter of falling feathers. But just when you think it's all stable and recovering, then disaster. Yep, the effects of climate change, that rapid shift from sizzling but no thunderous storms, took its toll. Fledglings expired in the sweltering heat. Torrential rain dislodged nests and drowned its baby occupants. All the butterflies have now gone. There are hardly any bees. What with soggy blossoms and trees already on the turn, summer's bumper hamper is already looking lean. It's not just early autumn in the air. Flooding is bringing hidden costs of overdevelopment to the surface. Hampshire's human sewage problem that developers won't admit is getting worse. Last month, Southern Water's record stank. A £90 million fine for thousands of illegal sewage discharges polluting rivers and coastal waters, including in Hampshire. Barton Farm, now disfigured with monopoly houses and county lines, once included sloping fields that naturally flooded and were an unintended overflow for nearby sewage plants. It's not surprising, then, that a permanent rising stench torments residents. Last week, the Environment Agency issued warnings against the swimming in the staggering 11 beaches across the Isle of Wight. Sewage has been released, sometimes for up to 9 hours. At least Hampshire looked ravishing in Chris Packham's The Walk That Made Me, recently aired on BBC Two. It filmed him walking the River Itchen from Eastleigh to Winchester. Those early morning river shots, the aerial view of St Catherine's Hill, the man-made medieval irrigation streams along the meadows at Twyford to give pregnant sheep more pasture to nibble on. It also revealed the depth of Packham's teenage mental health anguish, saved by a deep connection with nature. It follows then, surely, the latest figures about rising mental health problems in young people and even young children. A full-time mental health worker has just been stationed at A&E in Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust. The threats and signs of damage to the natural world are partly fueling this. Every building site, every new estate, every garden grab is increasingly processed as irreversible environmental loss. When I was growing up, we lived with the fear of nuclear Armageddon. But that threat was distant from the everyday. The opposite is true of today's youngsters. They watch helplessly as our government shamelessly tries to help its developer pals once again by removing the already flimsy legal safeguards to protect rare and under threat animals. This sentencing even more innocent creatures to a watery grave. Right, well, after that low-key Joanne Lewis column, there's a piece from Belgarum, please, John.
Yes, there is, and it's entitled Walkers Beware Swan. The Itchen Navigation near Wharf Hill is an idyllic, peaceful spot where the water meadows meet the city. But the peace has been disturbed in recent weeks by an aggressive swan taking a dislike to walkers, dogs and anything that moves. The bird's behaviour has been such that the Winchester College riverkeeper, Mark Sankey, has put up warning notices on Domham Road and gates within the nature reserve. One states, "The male swan is very protective of his young family and has become agitated when he sees what he perceives to be a threat to their well-being. This appears to include equipment, dogs and people. Whilst it's possible that this behaviour will subside as he starts to molt over the next few weeks, we would encourage members of the public to consider an alternative walking route or to maintain a safe distance from the swan. Please also exercise particular caution when walking a dog." Belgarum walked down to the navigation, but the swan and family were not to be seen. And this is accompanied by a lovely photograph of a sign nailed onto a tree. And this is a sign that you don't see very often. It says, "Beware, aggressive swan, extreme caution required."
Well, those were our regular weekly features, but before we move on to the general news, I know that many of you are eagerly waiting for the lighting up times. This week, the sun, if there is any sun, will rise at about 5:05 in the morning and might set about 9:05 in the evening. So on to items of general news, with John starting us off, please.
And my first one is rare moss beetle found in county for first time ever. A rare moss beetle has been spotted in Hampshire for the first time. The creature was found in an ecological survey of the water that flows out of three farms belonging to the Watercress Company, one of which is in Alsford. Nationally scarce, the moss beetle, Ochthyebus exsculptus, is sometimes known as the sculptured moss beetle. Often described as a water beetle, it is in fact amphibious, frequently choosing to live in moss on stones, either in the middle of the flow or on its margins. Normally found in the north of England, this is the first recorded sighting in southern England for some decades and the first ever for Hampshire. Robert Aquilina, the independent consultant ecologist employed by the Watercress Company to run the annual survey, said, "This is a surprising find. These beetles are rare nationally and have never been seen in Hampshire before. What is better still is that the beetle was found at two of the four sites surveyed, suggesting it is not just a one-off freak occurrence, but that they are happy with the general environment. These beetles are usually found in upland streams in the north of England and Scotland. So these chalk streams, with a constant temperature of 10 degrees centigrade as the water leaves the watercress beds, may represent a refuge for them in the south." The Watercress Company is the UK's biggest grower of watercress, with 50 acres of watercress beds split between Dorset and Hampshire, from which they supply most of the country's major retailers, including Waitrose and Tesco.
And this is entitled "Daughter's Thanks to Mum's Saviours." The daughter of a woman who suffered life-threatening injuries after her mother's car left the M3 has paid tribute to those who saved her. The woman in her 60s from Havant was cut free from a blue Peugeot 207 after it left the carriageway between Winchester and Popham and ended up at the bottom of a verge nearby. Emergency services were called, with fire crews from Winchester, Alsford and Basingstoke attending the incident on July the 28th, shortly before 1:30 p.m. She suffered life-threatening injuries and was taken to Southampton General Hospital by air ambulance. Now, her daughter, Kelly Metier, has said that she is expected to make a full recovery and has praised those who rescued her mother. Speaking to the Chronicle, Kelly said, "I would like to add that all of the emergency services involved did an amazing job at saving my mum. The whole family is so grateful to them. We would also like to thank the man who witnessed the accident and stopped to help. We believe his name was Alex, and he was the one who alerted the emergency services. Due to the nature of the accident, mum's car wouldn't have been seen by anyone just passing by, so this man was an integral part of my mum's rescue. Posting on Winchester Fire Station social media, Kelly wrote, "Thank you for your hard work. The driver of the car is my mum. She is expected to make a full recovery. Thank you for saving her life. Kiss, kiss, kiss." A fire service spokesperson said that the woman was physically trapped and was cut free from the vehicle.
Pubs' future uncertain over licensing review. A Winchester pub has come under the police spotlight after incidents of public nuisance which could see its boss stripped of his position. As previously reported, the Exchange in Southgate Street will have its licence reviewed by Winchester City Council following a request from the police. Reasons behind the application have now emerged, as the licensing subcommittee will determine the pub's future at a meeting on Friday. The application has been submitted by PC Brian Swallow, who has called for Designated Premises Supervisor, DPS, Colin Clark, to be removed from his position. PC Swallow has said that Mr. Clark has failed to uphold the licensing objectives, and as such, crime is being committed, people are getting injured, and there is a nuisance caused, and the lack of controls lead me to believe that the underage persons are being supplied with alcohol. A number of incidents at the premises have taken place in 2020 and 2021. On one occasion, a drunk man fell onto the pavement when leaving the pub, causing suspected serious facial injuries. Male friends that said that he had been drinking shots all night long in the pub, PC Swallow said. Premises inspected by special constables following the incident observed large build-up of uncollected glassware. Understaffed in relation to the number of patrons Clark spoke to and dismissive of advice given to him. In other incidents, drunk people were asked to leave, but they became very abusive and threatening violence towards the bar staff. The application states that Mr. Clark had no written forms for refusals or ejections involving intoxication, along with no written age verification policy. PC Swallow said, Clark thinks either that he has no need to uphold the licensing objectives or is completely ignorant that they exist. The committee has been asked to impose conditions such as SIA security on certain days of the week and certain events, body-worn video and comprehensive CCTV system, to name a few. He added, in addition, the removal of Clark as DPS, as I have no confidence in his ability to uphold the licensing objectives while authorising supply of alcohol. Without these changes to the premises licence, incidents of crime, disorder, drunkenness, antisocial behaviour and injuries will continue and increase in intensity and number. In response, Mr. Clark's solicitors, Trethowans, said, whilst Mr. Clark's recollection and understanding of some of the issues relayed do not agree with your accounts, he does not accept that in the very exceptional circumstances he found himself due to the pandemic, after 21 years in the trade as a tenant licensee of this pub, he fell short of some of the administrative standards expected.
Anniversary celebrations for churches. The parish of St Luke's Stanmore has celebrated their anniversary weekend. St Mark's Church at Oliver's Battery was 65 years old and St Luke's was 60 years old. St Mark's Church building is in the midst of a full refurbishment, and on the Saturday afternoon everyone was invited to see progress and to enjoy tea and cake. The weekend was made even more special because Reverend Mike Gardner and his wife Kate returned to the parish after his early retirement in November 2020. They left the parish in February 2021 to start a new life in Worcester. This coincided with the lockdown, and so it was not possible to have a proper farewell. On the Saturday evening, the parishioners enjoyed a bring and share supper at St Mark's, and they had the opportunity to say goodbye to Mike and Kate and for the parish to present them with a glass sculpture of their choice, a book of photographic memories, an orchid, and a celebration cake. Mike Gardner first came to the parish as a curate in 1997 and then became vicar, completing 23 years of ministry at St Luke's and St Mark's. On Sunday morning, a special anniversary service took place, combining both church buildings, and some hardy souls walked from St Mark's to St Luke's to complete the service led by Mike. It was poignant for Mike, as he had not been able to take a final service in the parish until now.
Pop star pupils raise funds. Pupils at Stanmore Primary School were fundraising at the end of a busy term. Years 3 and 4 were involved with the Winchester University project featuring Hannah Williams, the city's star who featured on The Voice. The singer came in to perform with the children and record a song to raise money for the charity Shelter. A spokesperson for the school said, "Pupils have worked hard to rehearse for this and were brilliant at performing like pop stars." Hannah thanked the children, commenting, "Singing and enthusiasm and behaviour all top-notch." All the children later took part in The Race for Life, raising an incredible £288.39 for Cancer Research UK. They completed a staggering 425 km, that's 262 miles, between them, showing true persistence and resilience on a hot day. Stanmore Primary is a school with 420 pupils serving the 4 to 11-year-olds in the southwest part of the city. Its full capacity is 315, and the head teacher is Sharon Taylor.
Efforts to secure historic collapsed wall in Hyde. Work has begun to secure the remainder of a historic wall in Winchester after part of it collapsed during heavy rainfall. A section fell on the path between King Alfred Terrace and King Alfred Place in Hyde on July the 6th, close to Westview House on Hyde Gate. It is not known how old the wall is, but it contains stones from medieval Hyde Abbey, the final resting place of King Alfred the Great that once stood nearby. This week, work has been carried out to make safe the remainder of the wall and allow the footpath to be reopened. A City Council spokesperson said, "Winchester City Council appointed a conservation structural engineer to assess the condition of Hyde Wall due to it being Grade 2 listed and of special architectural and historic interest. The engineer's report will advise on the most appropriate method of rebuilding, and this is still under consideration. Depending on whether an application for listing building will be needed, which can take up to 8 weeks to complete, will influence how long it will take to complete reconstruction of the wall. The work completed this week has been to ensure the remaining wall is secured and to reopen the public footpath." Rob Carter, Managing Director of Millgate Winchester, estimated the repairs could cost around £50,000. He said, "At the time of the collapse, it really is a beautiful wall, so I hope they repair it properly. No doubt the conservation officer will be looking at it." Edward Fennell of Egbert Road Hyde, founder of Hyde 900 and Friends of Hyde Gate, previously said, "Awful though it is, it can hardly be a surprise to those of us who live locally and who have observed with dismay the decline of care." Mr. Fennell is a leading campaign to the Hyde Gate area to be renovated with medieval gateway converted into cultural uses.
Luxurious Hotel appoints new general manager. One of the most luxurious hotels in Winchester district has appointed a new general manager. Steve Lewis is set to take over the reins at Leinston House Sparshope this month. He joins the team with over 14 years' experience in the hospitality industry. Mr. Lewis has worked with some of the world's most renowned hotel brands. "I'm absolutely delighted to be joining Leinston House and exclusive collection, a brand I've admired from afar, both professionally and personally, for a long time, he said. Their reputation for guest experience, staff development and quality product are second to none, and I look forward to leading a fantastic team at Leinston into a new chapter of development. Previous to a career in hospitality, Steve spent 11 years in international sports marketing industry for agencies, brands and teams. Managing Director Danny Pecorelli commented, "We are thrilled to welcome Steve Lewis into the collection as General Manager at Leinston House, and I look forward to seeing the property evolve and continue to thrive under his tutelage. I also want to extend my gratitude to Sunil Kunjangat for the past 2 years at the helm at Leinston and wish him all the very best for the future. Leinston House is a 5-star country house hotel founded in 1983 by ex-Forte executive Giuseppe Pecorelli."
Choir Stalwart bids farewell. It was an emotional goodbye as Twyford Singers marked the sound the end of an era that spanned more than 25 years. At their AGM, members bid farewell to musical director and conductor Derek Beck, who has left the choir. He joined in 1995 and became a key member of the group. Choir chairman Jeff Settertree said, "Derek joined us in 1995 and over the following 25 years has been brilliant in every way. His professionalism, patience and good humour have enabled us to give some memorable performances, both at our own concerts and when singing with other local choirs in the Winchester and County Music Festival, WCMF. He's also helped us to raise a lot of money for local charities. We shall certainly miss him, but have retained his expertise by electing him as our non-executive president. Derek was presented with a number of leaving gifts, including a biography and a large portrait of his favourite composer, J.S. Bach. The choir has been unable to sing together during the pandemic, but it plans to resume rehearsals in September with its new musical director and conductor, David Hall, who is director of music at Twyford School. Our programme for next season," added Mr. Settertree, "is a Gilbert and Sullivan concert in March to be held in Twyford Parish Hall and a delayed celebration of the WCMF centenary, a mass performance in May of Handel's Messiah by all 7 WCMF choirs at the Anvil, Basingstoke. It will be conducted by David Hall, the musical director of the Bach Choir. As normal, we also plan to sing carols in the Phoenix in Twyford to raise money for a local charity. Twyford Singers is a friendly, non-auditioned choir and would like to welcome further members, whether soprano, alto, tenor or bass. Rehearsals are on Tuesday evenings at Shawford Parish Hall. Contact membership secretary is Annie Hibbert, who can be contacted on 01962 713 630.
Flowers to adorn the cathedral for festival. Winchester Cathedral will be transformed with a striking and fragrant floral designs and installations as the Flower Festival returns. The Winchester Cathedral Flower Festival will return from September the 15th to 19th after it was last held in 2018. The event is being organised by members of the Wessex and Jersey NAFAS. Don't know what those stand for. National Association for Flower Arranging something or others.
Societies,
yes, okay. Each of the displays will tie in with the festival's theme of resonance, which is all about how memories, some we didn't even know we had, are triggered by the senses, touch, taste, smell, sight and sound. Thousands of blooms will fill the cathedral with spectacular contemporary installations. The stunning light and open architecture will provide an ideal environment to showcase beautiful and imaginative displays designed by the internationally renowned Pip Pensley as creative director. Pip Benchley said, "The designs of this year's Flower Festival are thoughtful and reflective of the losses and sacrifices so many have made following the pandemic. We are celebrating the healing effect of a flower in your hand, and how important even the simplest flowers foraged on daily walks have been to our lives over the past year and a half. A special preview evening will take place on September the 14th, where visitors can enjoy drinks and canapes whilst getting the exclusive opportunity to see the beautiful blooms on display before the event opens to the public." Alison Evans, Chief Operating Officer at Winchester Cathedral, said, "This beautiful exhibition of those thousands of flowers inspired by the architecture of the cathedral will result in a truly spectacular event. We look forward to welcoming visitors to both near, from both near and far to the cathedral for this year's Flower Festival, where we are sure they will discover a joy for all the senses and experience the wonder of this fantastic building in a special way. Ticket prices range from £5 to £12.
Tales from a retired zookeeper. Being bitten by a black widow spider, threatened by a 2-metre-tall kangaroo, wounded by a cassowary, and handling blue bottles for a TV drama were all in a day's work for Jeff Reed. The retired Marwell stalwart has just released a book called Earwigs to Rhinos, A Zookeeper's Story. As a young boy living in austere post-war London, Jeff Reed had little opportunity to enjoy his passion, a fascination for insects. But he followed his dream, which took him from collecting earwigs in an old teapot to working closely with some of the most endangered species on Earth, including rhinos, in two of the most famous zoos in Britain. Lockdown presented Jeff with the opportunity to record his fascinating life story. He brings the reader the joys and sorrows, the hilarious and the very unexpected, and takes us with him as he moves from inexperienced underage beginner to head keeper over a period of 50 years. In a book that describes the arduous, sometimes heartbreaking, but always rewarding work that continues through every season, Jeff takes readers behind the scenes of life at London Zoo during the 60s to Marwell, which opened in 1972. Jeff, now living in Kingsworthy, also describes his home life and how working with animals is not something left behind at the end of the day, but which filled his home and family life with excitement, drama, and fun. This book, which would appeal to readers of all ages, is available through most retailers. Jeff will be doing a book signing from 2 p.m. till 6 p.m. at Marwell Resort Hotel on August the 13th.
Bollard unveiled in memory of businessman. The memory of a dedicated city businessman has been immortalised. Winchester Business Improvement District has unveiled a newly painted bollard in the square in honour of Ken McCartney. Mr. McCartney was tragically killed by a falling tree whilst driving home in stormy weather in February 2020. He had joined the Winchester BID Board of Directors in April 2008 after opening Pavilion with his wife Mandy, a shop that offers women and men designer fashion. Mr. McCartney was chair of the board between 2012 and 2019, and the current board agreed that dedicating one of the painted bollards in the square to his memory was a fitting tribute. Monet's Water Lilies was a painting that has a special place in our hearts, said Mandy McCartney. We visited the gardens at Giverny in France on a family holiday. We also saw the original paintings in Paris, and a print hangs in our house. Ken loved the water, and the place evoked a great feeling of peace and tranquility. The bollard is a beautiful tribute to a very special person. Situated in the square in Winchester, it is a place he called home and where he will always be remembered. The bollard is painted in the style of Monet's Water Lilies by local artist Rachel Alexander, who is based at the Colour Factory. Dr. Paul Spencer, Executive Director at Winchester BID, said, "We are very pleased to have been able to work with Mandy and artist Rachel Alexander to create this piece of public art in the square outside of the pavilion in memory of Ken. He was our colleague and friend, and we remember him fondly for his outstanding leadership within the local business community and his passion for Winchester."
Restoring the grave of a World War I veteran. Hidden amongst numerous antiquated graves and tombs on the upper overgrown slopes of Winchester's West Hill Cemetery stood an eroded and discoloured yet imposing headstone that looks over the city towards St. Catherine's Hill. "So what?" I hear you say. Well, whilst walking in the cemetery with my wife, Sarah, and puppy Jack Russell Buster on a summer's evening earlier this week, Buster pulled me towards the imposing headstone mentioned above. As a local military man with some 38 years' service in the army, I was interested to read the inscription for Regimental Sergeant Major, RSM, James Furry of the Rifle Brigade. RSM Furry was a First World War hero who received the Military Cross and Distinguished Conduct Medal. Unfortunately, RSM Furry died shortly after the war on July the 22nd, 1921, and then was subsequently buried under the headstone which was erected by his admiring comrades. The MC is an operational gallantry award given to all ranks of the services in recognition of exemplary gallantry during active operations against the enemy on land. The Distinguished Conduct Medal, post-nominal letters DCM, was established in 1854 by Queen Victoria as a decoration for gallantry in the field by other ranks of the British Army. Was young Buster eagerly pulling me towards the headstone 3 days before the centenary of this local hero's sad demise a coincidence? Well, I'm not sure, but after taking my two sons, one of which, Patrick, lost his leg during action with Three Para in Afghanistan, we strongly agreed that, coincidence or not, we had to rally round to mark the centenary of RSM Furry's passing. My youngest son, Max, who aspires to join the military, formed a work party with me, and off we went with Buster to pay the RSM a visit. Under Buster's watchful eye, we carefully cleaned up RSM Furry's headstones and the surrounding area before leaving some flowers to mark his special day. We tried to research RSM Furry's actions, but only found a note on his burial notice, which simply said, "Duty served."
Review over multi-story to be held at High Court. The judicial review over the proposed multi-storey car park in Bar End is set to go ahead. Residents of Domum Road have been fighting the plan since they were first submitted and will now take Winchester City Council to the High Court. But civic chiefs have already submitted another application and groundworks have commenced at the former Voltex site. Dr. Michael Hurd, who is spearheading the legal proceedings, said, "The High Court judge has considered the strength of my request for a judicial review and has given permission for the case to proceed on the basis of the effect on sun and daylight, noise, lighting from the structure and headlights spilling onto the water meadows and one procedural matter. The council is defending their position. Meanwhile, the council has commenced the groundworks on the site and submitted a new planning application including retrospective permission for the work already being undertaken. The disappointing fact is the new application is virtually identical to the previous one, and the concessions the local residents put forward to reduce the visual and environmental impact of the structure have not been included in the plans. The most important suggestion is filling in the wall on the water meadow side so the building's lights, headlights and noise would be much reduced. This would be simple and not expensive. Reducing the height would make a huge difference and would reduce the parking spaces. But does Central Winchester really need more parking? The provision of EV charging points would still be available. The car park is set to have 287 spaces and stand around 15 metres tall. Plans include 800 square metres of photovoltaic solar panels and 6 electric vehicle charging bays. Dr. Hurd added, "This all feels rather undemocratic, with the council considering its own application. The decision of the planning committee should be the same, whoever is the applicant, and I do wonder if this was a private developer, whether permission would be granted."
Sports centre Portaloos destroyed in suspected arson. An arsonist is thought to have destroyed Portaloos, set up for public use outside the now-closed River Park Leisure Centre in Winchester. The centre, which had public toilets, closed in May when the new sports facility opened at Bar End. The centre is now boarded up, with the City Council yet to decide on the future use of the site. The City Council said that the Portaloos would be sited by the boarded up centre to serve people using North Walls Park, who would previously have used the centre. But the two loos have been destroyed and are now fenced off. A council spokesman said, "Winchester City Council is aware of the damage caused to the temporary toilets outside of River Park Leisure Centre. We are working with Hampshire Constabulary to investigate. Toilets will be replaced in due course." Many ideas have been suggested for the site, including a new music venue and also a Lido. A covenant prevents the site from being developed for housing.
This is a contributed piece from Eleanor Williams and Patrick Davis. It's headed "Death of Prominent City Lawyer and Local Politician." Kingsley Williams, who has just died, aged nearly 94, was best known in Winchester as the senior partner of Dutton, Gregory and Williams, where he worked from 1956 to 1981. He was the partner who dealt with the legal work at Conda, which was a major employer. His chief executive, with Robin Cole, remained a lifelong friend and squash partner. We were equally bad at squash. Kingsley was a member of the Labour Party from when he was at university. He was the Winchester City Councillor for the St John's Ward from 1966 to 1974, an area covering Winnell and the Brooks area of the city centre. He enjoyed canvassing and elections, which still sounds unlikely. He led the Labour group and chaired the planning committee. At the reorganisation of local government in 1973, he was elected to Hampshire County Council, representing a Southampton division. He led the 24-strong Labour group at the County Council until his appointment to chair the Wessex Regional Health Authority in 1975. He was proud of his roles as chairman of the Wessex Regional Health Authority, on the NHS Supply Council and the Wessex Institute of Public Health Medicine during the 1975 to 1996. In 1982, he was sacked as chair of the RHA by Kenneth Clarke, the health minister, when Mrs. Thatcher decided that no RHA chairs could be members of the opposition. He immediately led the sacked chairman around to the BBC to be interviewed on Radio 2. Kingsley was already a member of the Council of Southampton University from 1977 and chairman from 1967 until his retirement in 1998. The university gave him an honorary doctorate as thanks for his hard work. He was also the chairman of Winchester School of Art during the negotiations for the link to Southampton University. He was able to enrol on the first year of their new part-time course in History of Art and Design, and although pressure of work meant he only completed 1 year, he was able to give five of his surviving colleagues their degree certificates 5 years later. He particularly enjoyed the study tours to Florence and the Netherlands. Family holidays had always included visits to Ireland, France and Italy for their art galleries, stately homes and gardens. But his chief joy was sailing. He had learnt to sail as a teenager when the family settled in Fowey after his parents retired from teaching in Ghana. All three children were born in Accra, but were sent home to England aged 3, 4 and 5. Before the days of vaccinations, it was not considered safe for European children. Kingsley and his brother Mike continued to board at Kingswood School in Bath, but in World War II were evacuated to Uppingham. To their horror, their father came out of retirement to teach there when younger men were called up. Kingsley read law at Cambridge after a brief flirtation with medicine, adding more friends, including Norman Webb, later of International Gallup. "I wish I could play honky-tonk piano like Norman." He did his articles with a firm of solicitors in Cornwall until asked by his cousin to join his firm in Winchester. Retirement meant learning to birdwatch, weeding and enjoying his garden, trips to Ireland, Italy and Spain, visiting friends and family, reading and talking about politics, science, art. He was interested in everything.
Drug-related deaths in Winchester. Winchester recorded 6 drug-related deaths last year's figures show. The Royal College of Psychiatrists called on the government to wake up following years of cuts to addiction services, which it said have fuelled a record number of deaths across England and Wales. Office for National Statistics figures show there were 6 drug-related deaths recorded in Winchester in 2020, the same number as in the year before. The deaths relate to poisoning from a variety of illegal and legal drugs, including prescription and over-the-counter medicines. The figures count deaths from drug abuse, but also include those from accidents, suicides and health complications arising from drug use. In Winchester, 5 deaths last year were down to misuse, meaning they involved illegal drugs or were a result of drug abuse or dependence. Across England and Wales, 4,561 deaths from drug poisoning were recorded in 2020, 2/3 of these from misuse. It represents the highest total since comparable records began in 1993 and the 8th successive year of increase. The Office for National Statistics said around half of the deaths will have occurred in the previous year due to delays with death registrations, with the majority before the pandemic. Dr. Emily Finch, Vice Chair of the Addictions Faculty at the Royal College of Psychiatrists, said, "Years of cuts have left addictions services ill-equipped to treat people and prevent these deaths from rising. The government needs to wake up to the fact that cuts to services, disconnecting NHS mental health services from addiction services, and shifting the focus away from harm reduction to abstinence-based recovery is destroying lives and fueling the increase in drug-related deaths. The rates of drug-related deaths in the most deprived areas of England were around 5.5 times higher than those in the least deprived parts." Mark Moody, chief executive of the charity Change Grow Live, added, "For things to improve, we must directly challenge the stigma faced by people who use drugs. This starts by recognising that drug dependency is a chronic health condition which must be integrated alongside NHS services, criminal justice pathways and housing support."
Anniversary of first use of atomic bombs. The anniversary of the use of atomic bombs in World War II has been marked in Winchester. The United States detonated nuclear weapons in 1945 over Hiroshima on August the 6th and Nagasaki on August the 9th, ending the war. The combined death tolls are estimated at up to 250,000. Both those killed immediately and others who died subsequently of burns and radiation. Winchester Quakers Peace and Social Witness Group gathered at the Buttercross calling for nuclear disarmament as mandated by the United Nations Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which was ratified last October. The Mayor, Vivian Archwell, commemorated the anniversary with a reception at Abbey House. She launched a project in partnership with Winchester University's Faculty of Education, schools and Winchester members of SGI UK, a lay Buddhist organisation working for culture, education and peace. She said, "I am the 822nd Mayor of Winchester and the third to be a member of Mayors for Peace. I am proud to be part of a network of over 8,000 world cities, including 84 in the UK. It is an international non-political organisation with the aim of getting rid of nuclear weapons, preventing environmental degradation of cities, and promoting a culture of peace." The event featured a reading of what it was like to live through the atomic bombing, followed by meditative music by flautist Liz Lewis. John Brackstone, Director of Operations at the Faculty of Education, described plans to work with schools to spread a message of hope for the future. The Ginkgo Tree Project would also promote positive environmental and anti-bullying messages and support schools in creating peace gardens. An awareness of the time it will take the trees to grow will encourage thinking towards future generations. The mayor closed the event by thanking representatives from the University of Winchester, the local community and faith groups, Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council. The afternoon concluded with the making of origami peace cranes, which will be part of the activities in schools when the project is launched after the summer holidays in autumn 2021.
The new method for people to research their family history. Hampshire Record Office in Winchester is the new home for Hampshire Genealogical Society. With the Society's volunteers and Record Office staff, together with a one-stop shop of support for people researching their family history. From August the 3rd, Hampshire Genealogical Society have operated from the Record Office in Sussex Street. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, volunteers will be available to help anyone research their history. It's a free advisory service. Hampshire Genealogical Society also offer a paid service to undertake more detailed research. Councillor Edward Heron, County Council Executive Member for Recreation, Heritage and Rural Affairs, said, "More people want to learn more about the past. Fueled by popular TV shows and the ease of finding historic documents online. Hampshire Record Office is a treasure trove of archive materials that can help anyone with roots in the county to learn more about the past and make some amazing discoveries. This fantastic new partnership will support the work of our in-house team to help even more people to trace their family tree." Chairman of Hampshire Genealogical Society, Paul Pinhorn, said, "I'm delighted that we are moving to a new base that will enable our volunteers to work even more closely with the county's record office. People can learn a lot online, but a trip to the archives is essential if you want to know who your ancestors really were, what their lives were like, and the world they lived in. This can be daunting, and so this is where our knowledgeable volunteers can help. If you're interested in your ancestry but would like advice on how to start or are struggling with the research brick wall, please come and visit us at the Hampshire Record Office. Dr. Nick Barrett, president of the Hampshire Genealogical Society, who led the team of researchers for the first four series of BBC's Who Do You Think You Are, said the Society is clearly thinking about the future as a result of the pandemic rather than trying to recreate the past. This partnership is a bold step that will increase the visibility of the Society and demonstrate its importance to the Hampshire Archives and wider community by helping researchers connect people and places through time. The Record Office is the home of 1,000 years of history and comprises Hampshire Archives and Local Studies and Wessex Film and Sound Archive. The award-winning landmark building in Winchester was opened by Her Majesty the Queen in 1993. The collections are carefully housed in purpose-built accommodation with 8 miles of shelving.
Garden waste collections hit by COVID precautions. Householders in the Winchester district had their garden waste collections disrupted by COVID. Last week, the City Council suspended the service because Biffa staff were self-isolating after some team members' exposure to COVID and a national shortage of HGV drivers. The council had hoped to resume the full service on Monday, but another driver tested positive for COVID-19 and his crew was now self-isolating in line with government guidance, says the council. The garden waste collection service did restart in most of the district, but one round was affected with collection suspended in the Bishops Waltham and Waltham Chase and Swanmore area on Monday, and in the Colden Common and Twyford on Tuesday. On its website, the council said, "Customers will not lose out financially. We will be reviewing the annual contract duration with a view to extending the collection for a period in February to reflect the collections lost due to the impacts of COVID-19 and the HGV driver shortage. For those wishing to dispose of garden waste prior to the service recommencing, the HWRCs remain open for bookings or garden waste can be retained until the service recommences. The council's other waste collection services remain unaffected and will continue as per the timetable."
Order arrest. A man has been charged with breaching a dispersal order in force in Winchester city centre. Gary Trevor Page, 48, of Walpole Road, was arrested last Wednesday and has been charged with failing to comply with the order imposed for the King's Walk area. He is due to appear at Basingstoke Magistrates Court on August the 19th. The order was imposed after chronic antisocial behaviour and officers are taking active measures to tackle this problem. The order was due to run until last Thursday and covers the area surrounding the city centre. It gives officers the power to disperse people loitering. Inspector John Stribley said, "We are listening to the concerns of local residents and the local businesses that make up our city. We have increased patrols in the area and are working with the Winchester Community Safety Partnership and Winchester BID to address the issues."
Eatery into next unit. A group of restaurateurs are one step closer to transforming a former retail unit in Winchester High Street into an eatery. Taz Food Limited applied to Winchester City Council to site extraction equipment to roof plant area of the former Next Store at the 9 to 11 High Street. Company's house lists the applicants as takeaway food shops and mobile food stands. The application now has been approved by planning officers. Loungers, which runs the Cozy Club and Lounges chain, was given permission to convert the former Next shop in August 2020, but no work has yet taken place. Well, that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle Extracts for this week. Just another reminder that Liz Legree is the person to call if you have any problems with the recording. Please telephone the contact number, which is on the key fob attached to the memory sticks. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And we should also offer a vote of thanks to our editors for this week's edition. And thank you, of course, to John.
Goodbye.
And to Peter.
Goodbye.
For joining me in presenting the Hampshire Chronicle this week. Now, when you finish recording, listening to the recording, please put the memory stick in the yellow envelope. Also, put in the address label inside the envelope. Pop it in the post. No stamp required. Well, thank you for that. And it's goodbye from me, Peter Lydiard. Goodbye.